Welcome back to Unpaid Movie Critics at our site, unpaidmoviecritics.com. I am joined by the fixliest fixel of all the fixels.
There's not that former, many.
Former drama teacher, former ballet student, former ballet teacher, former interpretive dancer, and now member of the Detroit Film Critics Association, sort of. The multi-haired girl at large from Detroit. She's starting her new site. I'm a girl at large in Detroit, running around doing things. Miss Becky Fixel.
Okay, and Mr. Sametz, I have a question for you. I'm not going to be the hype girl.
An intro.
You do. Mike does run Mike the Fanboy, and he's been out at events.com because we only do .coms. We don't do .nets because they seem scammy. So. I'm just saying. Now, Mr. Sametz just went to a movie premiere this week. Was it a premiere? What did you do on the 13th? You were photographed.
Oh, I
just get a random text. And Mr. Sametz is noted in this on Getty Images as a screenwriter.
I am. So, through the pandemic, I have been writing quite a bit, and one of my horror films that I wrote was a horror comedy, won top five in ScreenFest. And ScreenFest is known as the Sundance of horror. So it was actually a really cool thing. So last year it won. And then I went to ScreenFest on the 13th to support a friend of mine, Dan, whose movie, American Boogie Woman, I think. It's an Eileen Wuornos story. If you should check that out.
Is it good? Was the movie good?
It's streaming right now on... I think he said iTunes video.
Okay.
But yeah, it's streaming. Go just I search. Did. Yeah. And so I was there to support Dan, see the movie. And so they said, you're tall and Canadian. We'll take your pictures on the carpet. So yeah, so it was kind of fun. I get to go to the carpet.
Randomly getting the text from you, and I have no idea what it's about. And I'm looking, and we're driving around, and I'm just scrolling. I'm like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "Oh, there's Mike." And then I see screenwriter, and I was like, "Oh, yay, so proud!"
But yeah, it was really cute.
And it was a decent movie. It's one we should go see.
Yeah, go check it out. Dan's a great guy. They shot this in 12 days.
Wow,
a whole movie, and it stars Peyton List from Cobra Kai. And it's a unique and interesting take on the Eileen Wuornos story. It was a pandemic film, so they shot it all throughout the pandemic. So there's always limitations of the pandemic, but he did a fun little twist on it. And it's not necessarily it's historical fiction, but it's kind of fun. You know, it's just a fun thing. You go into it thinking it's going to be fun. You know?
But I mean, it's anything like The Tudors or The Great, you know that it has a nugget of truth and history in it, but the whole thing is just kind of bastardized and, you know, taking its own
direction. Well, yeah, and this version, the way he did it was because nothing is really known about this time of her life, so the way he did it was he kind of made it like she's telling the story the day before she gets before her execution. So he, you know, it's her version of telling the story, and she's a known liar. So it's not necessarily this is what actually happened, but it's like her telling the story, which I thought was a great little twist on it. So
cool. Nice. I just enjoyed
seeing. So look it up on streaming.
A nice, you know, splash that's your name and you're a screenwriter. I see two pictures. I'm still scrolling. How many there were?
Two or three, but mostly two.
But mostly. Okay, fair enough. All right. So look at you getting nice accolades throughout the days. And, you know, at least you can go to these events and go to red carpet type things.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting with the pandemic. I used to go to everything and now I'm like, I don't want to do anything. But it's been a wild ride, you know, going through everything and emotionally. And throughout the pandemic, I had a lot of, you know, my company basically got shut down, like, you know, I lost one of my best friends, who isn't a friend, which is nice to know. And then you know, the website obviously was a lot of based on in-person experiences. You couldn't really do that. So that kind of like has been interesting of a shift, and my whole life had to shift and change. And I got back into writing.
But you did well.
And I wrote like 8 scripts and a pilot throughout the thing, throughout the pandemic. And we're working on funding right now for one of the movies with a few producers. And it's very exciting and scary and like, oh, gee, what's going to happen next year? And I hopefully, you know, things pick up work-wise in terms of my company and, you know, things like this. But really getting this movie made is such a priority. And I think for a lot of people, and the nice thing has been, I don't know if I've trained my friends, but you talk about friends and having friends, but I feel like I'm a very honest person. Like, hey, if you suck, you suck. Can't help it.
Yeah.
But I want people to say, hey, Mike, by the way, you shouldn't sing for a living. And I would say, yes, you are absolutely right. I should not sing. But in a way, it's like being honest with each other and not in a dicky way, but just being like, dude, stop. But to me, I just feel like that's such a cool thing when you have a relationship with a lot of people that you're honest with them, they're honest with you. And you know, when they say something positive or negative, it's not necessarily them trying to hurt your feelings. It's them supporting you.
It's more constructive criticism.
It's constructive. And I feel like that's very Midwest, you know, speaking of D-Town. And I say 80 to 90% of all my friends are like that. So when I had a lot of friends, and I'm telling you, people would line up to tell me how much I suck.
Oh, I wonder if you had a rough time.
When you put yourself out there, it's like they, you know, and some people are like, oh, let's do it. Cause I'm sarcastic. I like to insult people and they like to insult me, but I don't do it behind people's back, do it in front of their face because it's fun.
You'd rather have them know.
I'd rather have them know. It's kind of fun to see their reaction. You know, so doing this writing thing and seeing, you know, a lot of my friends go, oh my God, this is amazing. And get passionate about a project that I wrote has been such an amazing experience, you know, and it's been very sweet.
It's also what you needed, because I know at the beginning of the pandemic, you were very down.
Mm-hmm.
So it was your outlet and something for you to do. Like for me, for my anxiety, I've been out playing in dirt and, you know, gardening and doing that. So, and then redoing the house room by room. And so, you know, but that's what's been working for me. But we all have to have our little outlet and do our own thing.
Right. And this has been really, it's been great. And it's been great to see it. I, out of all of my scripts that I've entered into contests, everyone has placed.
That's awesome.
Various things. My dramas was the top 100 in a contest called Screencraft. Another horror drama was top 100 in Scriptapalooza. This one was top 5 in. Everyone has a different way of doing it. Like Scriptapalooza, you get top 100 out of 6,000.
Okay.
And then they pick the top person. So it's like you have, the top 100 is almost like winning, just so people understand how that works. And then for Scream Fest, they do top 200, top 100, 50, 5, and 1.
Okay.
And that's out of, you know, again, around, they didn't say for that one, but I think it's around 6,000. 6,500.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. People. But I mean, you're also in LA. And if somebody's not an actor.
It's worldwide, though.
Oh, okay.
It's a worldwide competition. So anyone can enter, you know, even from you in Detroit.
Well, I know, but I'd have to write, and I haven't written in a long time. I mean, I write articles, but those are one-offs.
You know. So
just while I was waiting for you, working on another movie review, because that's what my week's been. So.
Right. And, you know, and I went, you know, I was in stage 32, there were contests for the drama. I mean, like, I've just had taken some of these scripts individually, picked certain contests to enter for them. And it's been a great experience in terms of that. So it's been nice. So it's been cool to get like a nice little resume built up throughout this too. And so we'll see what happens, you know, hopefully trying to get this thing independently produced. And I've been selling, if you're looking for autographed memorabilia, hit me up, because I've been selling a lot of my stuff.
Two that are behind me that aren't up on the walls yet.
Exactly. I've been selling my stuff as a fundraiser to raise some money.
Yes.
And I mean, it's not going to be near what I need, but at least to get this going. And it's been kind of a fun thing. If I have to, I can, you know, I'll sew the costumes myself, but
right,
you know, trying to get in. And we got, you know, we got some cool news this week about some certain things about the film. So, you know, I'll let people know as it gets more and more. Yeah. So, yay.
Good. Awesome. All right. So do you want to go into your movie first?
I think we should go into my movie first because it was the assignment. And then we'll go into
I interpreted the assignment differently, not wrong. But anyway.
I don't know. I think it was wrong, but that's okay.
Okay. So you chose 92 Batman Returns. And you want to go
into what we're talking about?
You wanted to talk about characters we liked.
Yeah, characters we loved. So when I say characters, you know, you talk about like, you know, Elle Woods, you talk about, you know, Catwoman, you talk about Thor.
Okay,
you
so talk you're talking about major characters. You didn't exactly specify that. And there's not anything wrong with choosing somebody who's a secondary character if you love that character. So
if they're playing a character, but
anyway, you chose this movie because you love Catwoman and you love Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
Yes,
not the later one.
Well, I think the later one. No, not Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. I was like, wait, Hathaway? Yeah.
No. And
look up the year then. No, I don't know who, if anybody liked that one. So
I think she did okay. I think out of all the Catwomans, I think Julie Newmar did a really great job. She's my second favorite Catwoman. But Pfeiffer, I think, just took that role and just made it into something that it just blew the screen off. It's so stunning, her performance, and she's so into it.
And it's
there's
not
no Michelle
something
Pfeiffer
she normally plays. The only thing I have with that role in general, and it's not her role, her playing it or Hathaway playing it or anything, it's that comic book issue that it's this dorky, meek little woman that something happens and she turns into Catwoman. You know, it's that almost like the, oh my gosh, take the glasses off and she's gorgeous type trope that gets played over and over and over. That is my only issue. Well, no, I have another issue. And again, this is just nitpicky on my side. There is no way she'd be doing 90% of that shit in heels.
Well, I mean, pleather. I mean, let's put it that way. I mean, that she sewed herself.
Right.
I mean,
because totally not. I mean, and I noticed later, and I think in the original outfit, like when it starts, it's 100% pleather. And then later, like the corset area is a more breathable fabric. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Like she probably needed to breathe. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the first, if you look at the film, like she, in the first moment, she's taking her outfits and sewing them together. So it's a piecework. And then it shows later her repairing it and changing it. So that's why the outfit does change throughout the movie. It's very subtle, I think, but very well done.
One thing I had to, and Jason laughed at me because I backed up the movie a few times just to verify this. And I was pulling up an image on my phone at the same time. And it was made about the same time the other movie was being made. The stitch marks on her costume are almost identical to Sally's in Nightmare Before Christmas. Like if you look.
Oh, you know, that's interesting. I hate Nightmare Before Christmas.
Whatever.
I saw it maybe twice and I was forced each time. So I didn't really notice that, but I can see that as a possibility.
They're both Burton. I mean, it would make sense. And you notice other nods to his other movies as you go through and rewatch his other movies. But I was watching it. And I mean, the legs are just a little off, but the arms, the neck, everything, it's almost identical. And I was I was like, yeah, I got to back that up. Okay. So.
Well, and Tim Burton does that. I mean, so it doesn't shock me. Like if you watch Dark Shadows.
Yep.
I mean, there's so many references. I mean, besides the fact that almost everybody in that movie he's worked with before, like Pfeiffer and Depp, Helena Bonham Carter.
Obviously.
But, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer has the nod to her character. And then if Chloe Grace Moretz comes out of her thing and she turns the camera and she's like, woof. I mean, that was obviously a nod to Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman. You know, there's a lot of little things he does in there that's kind of fun, that nods to everything in the past. Yeah, I love Tim Burton. I think when he does something right, he does something right. This movie itself, as a whole, I don't think is his most effective film. I don't like the Penguin as much. I think he's gross for no reason to be gross. And
but
I know
he
likes
to be a bad guy.
I know he likes his blood splatter. I know he likes this, but like when he eats a raw fish, do we need to see this? Like, it was just, it was too much, I thought. And I thought Danny DeVito did an amazing job.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. But it was not my favorite part. I'm like, Michelle Pfeiffer is my favorite part of any Tim Burton movie in existence.
How many Tim Burton movies is she in? Just this one in Dark Shadows, or?
Yeah, I think she's only done the two with him. Okay. Michael Keaton obviously did the two Batmans, and he did Beetlejuice. I think he was in Dumbo, which I think everyone's trying to forget. I didn't watch it. I couldn't.
That wasn't the worst adaptation that they've done for live action. So,
It just looked uninspired.
Well, they basically, like every other one, pretty much did it verbatim. They just took out the drug references. So,
which I think, you know, that is Disney fight. But Batman Returns, I think, if you're looking at a film, I love the fact that it takes place during Christmas. I think that's great. It's a Christmas movie, theoretically, but it just adds a lot to it. But without Pfeiffer, I don't think that film would be anywhere near where it is. Originally, Michelle Pfeiffer, Madonna was actually thought about being Catwoman, and she turned it down.
That would have played well.
I don't either. It depends on how it would have worked, but I don't think the reason Michelle Pfeiffer is so good is because she's a really good actress, and she committed. Like when she was a dork, she committed to being a dork. When she was Catwoman, she committed to being Catwoman. There are moments when she's kind of the dorky secretary in the beginning. I'm like, wow, she committed to that because she's Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean,
yeah, but she,
one of the most beautiful women in the world.
In reality, let's be real here. She would never be the dorky secretary.
I don't know.
I don't think she would. It's kind of like Gal Gadot being one in Wonder Woman. You know, you just look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, she would play that, but I don't think she would be that.
I don't know. I don't know. I actually have known a lot of women who were extremely gorgeous and did and had those kind of jobs. It wouldn't have shocked me.
They're not always the meek and can't stand up for themselves and then sudden flip. You know, like I said, it's that trope, and that's one of the issues I have with it. But that's not Michelle Pfeiffer. That's the role.
Well, yeah. And you look at Superman, same kind of thing. He's a dorky guy, he turned into Superman, blah, 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 blah.
And you
blah,
take
blah.
Off his glasses and oh my God, he's Superman.
Yeah, and he's super hot. Come on. Like you can't tell that's Henry Cavill underneath that suit. Like his muscles are literally breaking the seams of the shirt when he moves his arm.
Nothing will button up properly. Let's be real. So yeah, it's just that kind of stupid thing that Hollywood always does.
Yeah, and I mean, even in so many of these things, like you're kind of like, come on, people. But you can tell. I did think it was more effective here. And I think it was effective here more because she sold it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are those moments in her apartment when she's talking to herself and hearing her mother's thing. And, oh my God, you know, and she goes, like, I go back to the office. It's like you hear her and you see her doing it. I think she sold it for me.
Although, can more we talk than anything about else. That apartment? Holy crap, bubblegum pink, even the ivy.
Yeah.
But then the outside, and it's just this little top of the building.
Like, yeah.
Even so, say Gotham is like New York or, you know, LA or San Francisco, she would be paying way ridiculous prices for that and then painted it Pepto-Bismol and covered it in stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they picture and they talk about Gotham being this horrible. And every iteration of Batman, a horrible crime-ridden city. So if that's it, I mean, like your property values aren't that high because of the crime and everything. I don't understand how there can be so much crime. I mean, there's enough rich people.
You know who the bad guys are. They kind of announce themselves.
Yeah, like I mean, between everyone, there's like, oh, it's the Riddler. Oh, new one. You know, I mean, move at certain points. I mean, like, well, I better go.
Well, there is that. But then at the same time, like the newer versions of the Batman, not the newest version, not Ben Affleck or is it Robert Pattinson is going to be Batman next, whatever. Mm-hmm. The Christopher Nolan ones are shot mostly in Chicago.
Right.
crime rate in Chicago and the prices of stuff are all high. So,
but Chicago is not nearly as high as New York. New York is
no.
It's insane.
It's like San Francisco.
Right.
Although that should be flipping with people moving out of the area since they can all work remote now. So we'll
see. People are leaving San Francisco pretty rapidly. But yeah, that movie in and of itself, it's just one of those movies I can rewatch over and over and over and over and over. Again, you can see the flaws in it.
Yeah. But it's from the 90s, so we can nitpick everything now from the 90s.
It's from the 90s. You can see it. The pacing's a little off. It's not necessarily my favorite movie, but it's my favorite character.
So the Batmobile, so plasticky, it made me laugh. And I was like, oh, I didn't remember this. And it's so funny because I had to look up what year it was, because I think the Batman Begins, I remember seeing that when I was pretty, what do you say, four apples tall? I had just got my ears pierced. So I was pretty little sitting in theater watching that.
That's hilarious.
I was like, was it this one or was it that one? And I was like, oh, it's the one before this. So yeah, I had to look it up. I'm sure I saw this in theaters because, it was Batman. My parents were like, yeah, you guys go to the movie theater. Bye.
Right. I mean, and then at the time, these were dark movies for Warner. I mean, now we look at them and they're like, it's light and candy. But back then it was criticized for being super dark.
But then, they have Tim Burton doing it, and most of his movies are super dark.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But even if you watch Batman 89, it's not a dark now in comparison. Mm. I mean, now we have children getting turned into zombies on The Walking Dead and bloody guts, and that's just everywhere on regular TV. Yeah, it's cable, it's still regular TV.
But I mean, okay, so on that note, I just watched was in the middle of typing up the review for it before this, the new Halloween movie and Halloween Kills. I don't like horror films, but I think I'm so desensitized because of the shows we watch now.
Yeah.
There were a few parts I just kind of cringed at the blood, but it wasn't scary to me. So I was like, wow. I mean, I am watching it in the middle of the day, but it's one of those that I'm like, it didn't make me, there weren't the jump scares that I was used to. Maybe if I was at home alone and dark and all that, and but it wasn't that scary.
Wow.
So yeah, but maybe we're just getting desensitized, because if you watch a lot of these movies, a lot of those creative kills, they get more creative as you go.
Yes. And that's it. That's, the more creative a kill, the less realistic it is.
Yeah.
And that's, even writing, when I wrote my movie, I love creative kills.
They're entertaining. Fun.
But I wasn't trying to make a realistic horror movie. I was trying to make a horror comedy. So I wanted over the top kills. And the original Halloween wasn't like that. It was like, it just stabs them. And that's what makes it so scary. I didn't see the Halloween Kills yet, but
it's on Paramount Plus right now and in theaters as of today. But there was still the killing and the stabbing and shooting. But I mean, there's a scene where a firefighter is going into this burning house and Michael Myers is coming out to get him. He's going after him with a circular saw. And I'm like, why is a fireman taking a circular saw into a fire?
That's stupid, kind of, huh?
Uh-huh. I mean, there were a couple times that the movie's a little more self-aware, and, this lady thinks he's in the back seat, tells her husband to go look, and he goes, no, I'm not going to look at that. And he runs away because he's like, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to look in the back seat for a serial killer, which, right. So, he's been killing people for 40 years. You think they would have caught on to something by now, but...
I mean, isn't he tired? I mean, I'm sorry.
It's the 12th.
I don't want to leave the house. And he's just out there killing and going through all this shit and falling out of windows. I'm just like, no.
Purchased the house that he grew up in. So, that's not going to end well.
Right.
So.
And why would it?
Right. But why would you, the serial killer that's never been stopped and is still out there. Let's buy his house and update it.
No.
It's like, old houses that are, you know, 100, 150 years old, like the Conjuring house was recently up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it even says ghosts included, which cracked me up in the listing.
That's funny.
But that's a ghost, not somebody who's supposedly alive and trying to get you, you know. Yeah. So especially, you know, they come back on Halloween. How about you go on vacation on Halloween?
Yeah.
Just a thought. Just a thought.
Just an idea. If you're going to buy it, just maybe take that moment to not be there. Just right. Toss it.
You know? And, you know, you're in Illinois, so you can take a little road trip and go to Salem. It's probably safer. So
yeah, no shit. See the Hocus Pocus houses. You'll love it.
Right? I love Salem. It's a cute little town. So we
now going to the opposite end of the spectrum.
But also Christmas.
Also Christmas, ironically, is Becky's choice for her favorite character. That he's was my air quotes.
Okay, he's so not a character. Here's why, yes, he's playing a character. Jack Black's character, Miles, the reason I like him as a character and I like him in the movie, besides the fact it's not his usual type of role, is he's playing something that's so genuine that you actually feel for that character. It's not something over the top. It's not a trope. And that's why I chose that. So
Becky chose the holiday. I'm like, yes. So that's because no one's going to know that name of the character.
Sorry. So
the Mike romantic comedy, The Holiday.
Yes, and it's a Christmas movie. And you love the movie, you said. So get over it.
I like the movie.
You just don't agree with my choice.
Because I don't think it's
not an iconic character.
Well, he's not a character. I mean, it's just...
He is a character.
When you think of characters, you think Sean from Shaun of the Dead. You think, you know...
I do like that movie. But I don't like... So, okay. So here...
And I guess, honestly... Okay. I thought, when rewatching it...
Mm-hmm. You just like...
Jack... Him? No, I mean, it was fine. I actually saw more Jack Black than I thought. And I actually was like, oh, look, he's actually... It felt like he was just sleepy Jack Black.
Really? Like,
I didn't think he was that different from what he usually plays.
I think he's a lot different than what he usually plays, because he usually plays the over-the-top ones. But he's toned down, but that character is a character I like. So,
but he's still Jack Black.
Well, he's Jack Black, but he's always going to be Jack Black. That'd be like saying he's not Nicolas Cage
in
all of his roles, because we know he's always Nicolas Cage in every freaking role.
Well, yeah, it's like saying, oh, look, Sandra Bullock is still Sandra Bullock. Well, yeah, of course she is.
Because but she doesn't always play the same character. But so this is our discussion then, because...
That's debatable.
So our discussion, because you said character, and I went for somebody in a movie, you were looking for iconic character.
So, yeah, I guess I should have specified more iconic. I thought you would have gotten that. I said Catwoman. But
here's the thing. I have a Wonder Woman hanging over my desk that you can't see. I've got Edna Mode over there. I've got characters all over my office, but none of them, I don't go, oh my God, I need to see that movie because Edna Mode's in it or Wonder Woman's in it. I don't have and I'm not a, oh my God, Spider-Man or Iron Man. I don't have that attachment to characters like that. And I don't know if that's just me, because I know you obviously do. I have a friend who's obsessed with Spider-Man. I just don't.
Hmm.
So
you're weird.
Well, that's not news.
I had this guy at my old apartment building when I was a manager.
Uh-huh.
I didn't, super quiet, kept to himself. He was killing people, just kidding.
You never know.
I had to do a walkthrough of the building to kind of see what was repairing wise. And I walked in. He had a wall. And this is before the series came out. A wall of Supergirl memorabilia.
Oh, wow.
So and loved. I stopped and I was like, and mind you, these are singles. It's not like a one bedroom.
Yeah. This is like a studio.
It's a studio. Yeah. And I went, holy shit. That's a lot of Supergirl. I mean, it was like my office, but just Supergirl. Everything was Supergirl, like little action figures that I didn't know existed. And I was like,
But there's that fandom that attack. I mean, if you look around me in the office, there's a high, you know, Disney theme behind me or whatever, but it's not one character.
Right. And I'm very eclectic in my taste. Like, I mean, I love my Buffy's stuff and I love, you know, this and that, but I like a roundabout stuff. I don't focus on one thing. It's like, oh Lord.
Right. And I mean,
that's a little weirder to me, but God bless you.
Funny because like I told Jason, I was like, well, this is what I chose. And he kind of did the same thing you did. Like, okay. But he's like, don't hate the movie, but okay. And he's like, you could have chose like Bridget Jones or.
Yeah.
Which I watched that movie last night because I need it. My eyes are hurting from watching all these freaking movies for screeners this week. So I was like, I need something mindless, something fluff. So that's my go-to for fluff. But I don't know that. I mean, I don't have Bridget Jones stuff anywhere. So, you know,
I have a couple.
Do you? Well, never mind. I was going to say, do you really? I'm shocked. No, I'm not.
I have a couple of sign posters, you know.
I'm sure you do. I mean, those weren't listed for sale. So what's up?
They weren't.
What? They weren't? No, because weren't, you won't give those up.
I was thinking of putting one up actually, because I have one that's just Renee. It's a teaser of her. And then I have the one that's Colin, Hugh, and Renee. But only Renee signed it. And I was like, I don't want to go through the rabbit hole of the two. So I might sell
it. Well, if you ever put that one up, you know who to contact first. But that's the thing. But your site is also Mike the Fanboy. So you have that attraction and latch onto characters. But I don't have any character that, I mean, what character is there like really for just a normal, air quotes, white girl?
Well, I mean, you have a Beetlejuice sign behind you. There's a major character right there.
That is, I mean, yeah, but I'm not in
John
love.
Wick. That's a major character who got to go back to Keanu in every podcast.
Every episode. But
love the Keanu, you know.
The fact that they're doing another John Wick, yes, I will go see that movie. The fact that they're working on another Beetlejuice, I mean, I will, but Beetlejuice isn't something that I, you know, would, I mean, we actually have a Beetlejuice welcome mat in front of our door right now that says it's showtime. But
oh, yeah, it's fun.
You know, it's not a character that I would go, oh my God. I must have everything of, or you know, it's just, that's not me. So maybe my choice reflects that more than a lack of clarification on the assignment.
Perhaps. And that's fine. I mean, honestly, you know, I actually really enjoyed The Holiday. I think it's a very cute movie. I think
it's cute. It makes me cry every time. And I hate that.
You know what I actually liked about it? I hated Titanic as a film. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking, I have a signed poster, but I still don't like
it. Of course you do.
Because it's iconic, but iconic characters. This movie, when I watched The Holiday, it made me fall in love with Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
More than even, I think I saw this before I saw Eternal Sunshine. And then I saw Eternal Sunshine. I thought, oh my God. It really nailed the Kate Winslet love for me.
The only problem.
And she did such a great job. I mean, Cameron Diaz too. Like all of the actors did great. Even Jude Law, he played himself.
Yeah, and I think this one came out at the same time. Around the same time, there were like 5 or 6 Jude Law movies that all came out about the same time.
Yes, so he was over.
It was exposed. We were over Jude Law'd. But I mean, the only issue I have with Kate Winslet's character, and I mean, and I think it's more a personal thing, is she's a woman that's being used and is in a manipulative relationship. She plays it very well, but I think it's something that a lot of women can relate to. It's something that we've all had to some degree. And I mean, I guess guys probably do too, you know. So it's, you know, I don't like that part of her character, but that's not her acting. That's that role. So, you know, but I mean, she does find her backbone and her voice and get out. So.
I think she did a really good job of going against the trope of what you're saying. Yeah. I think she did a really good job. You know, Jude Law kind of dove into the trope, which is fine.
Yeah.
Two different polarized ways of coming at the character. And, you know, Jack Black was there, sleepy. And then, you know, yeah, Cameron Diaz playing Cameron Diaz. But it all worked. It all really worked before. So I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of those little movies that I think people have found over time, because when I talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, that or that, you know, it's like a holiday movie that gets found,
right?
But not it's not Love Actually.
Right. Well, you know, and that's one that it's one of the ones that's not in our rotations at the holiday season, Love Actually. Mm. And I think it's probably, and this is kind of a weird story, but we were at his parents for Christmas one year and his sister put it on, which is fine. It's a Christmassy movie, yeah. Whatever.
Yep, it's except Christmas, for the, yeah.
That whole shooting a porn scene.
Right. Okay. That's a whole different subject, but
that was really awkward.
It's a weird, weird movie. It's a weird movie. That's why I kind of like it. They don't care. They're like, yeah, we're going to be fucking buck naked. And I was like, I remember seeing it. And I was like, there's boobies. Like, whoa. And it was Martin Freeman who yep. ended up becoming, you know, Bilbo Baggins.
Right. And that's like, the thing. Ooh. You know, and the movie's just kind of quirky. I mean, our holiday pick is usually the one that we go, and we'll watch it in the middle of the year. Have you watched The Ref?
I love The Ref.
Oh my God.
One of the best holiday movies.
It is. And that no one knows. One year.
Yeah.
We watched that like several times during the holiday season. So, but a lot of people have never heard of that one. So that is yeah. a holiday recommendation.
Judy Davis, when she comes in and she's like, oh, here's the dish I made, blah, blah, blah. It's a thing. And she goes, and then the mom's like, it sounds very sweet. And she slams on the table and she's like, donate it. I was like,
and then Christine Baranski's line that the sex, drugs, and setting women on fire just cracks yeah. me up every time.
It's so well done.
It is. And it's one of the really sleeper is. Ones that people don't know about. I mean, we had a little bit yeah. of time that we kind of stopped watching it after the whole Kevin Spacey issue.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, that it kind of so taints the movie.
Yeah, it's, you know, Swimming with Sharks, you know, it was such a good movie, you know, and his thing. We're totally digressing from the subject at hand.
Oh, God, yes, we are, but that's okay.
And, but this could be the okay. This is I thought we'd have a different topic, but let's just keep going with this one. I think it's kind of fun when you're talking about a film that gets ruined because of an actor
or even a show.
Think or of Bill show, Cosby. Either way, think of Bill Cosby. You know, Kevin Spacey, The Ref is one of my favorite movies. It's tough
yep.
to watch, and also Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
not only for Brian, not only for Kevin Spacey, but Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole thing with Bryan Singer, and he hasn't been, you know, convicted of anything or
yes.
it's just accusations out there. But
still,
I know enough being in Hollywood.
There's enough that personally you hear.
That I knew that.
It's not shocking you know, to you.
I knew people involved.
But here's the thing. If you knew that beforehand and you watched it and didn't have a problem, why is it now a problem now that the accusations are out there publicly? Or was it a problem before?
Well, here, what's interesting is when you hear it from one person, and I knew a couple friends, and they were sort of not really involved, but they were on the outskirts of it. One guy, I think he was more involved than he told me about.
Okay.
I think he was dating him. I did know one guy who was dating Bryan Singer. And I don't know if he was of legal age at the time. Because he was very young. But I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. And this was when I found out, when I was learning all this. This was after X-Men. When he left the X-Men franchise,
mm-hmm.
this was what I was hearing about. So I knew before he did Superman. And it was a little interesting going back and X2, I think, is one of the best superhero movies made. So yeah, it was a little bit of a challenge.
But you knew about it before it came out, though.
I knew. No, not X2. I knew most of this between after X2 came out.
Okay.
And I saw those movies. But before he did Superman Returns, okay. I believe. I may have heard about it more personally after Superman Returns. I don't remember, to be frank. I don't really talk to either one of them now. There's people involved. But yeah, it was wild, and it did taint it a little bit, even now watching it. And even then, I remember going back. I don't think I actually saw Superman at the time. I don't remember. It does give you a different feeling when you're watching it. You know,
I mean,
a friend of mine actually worked on Superman Returns and knew a lot about, I heard some stories after about some of the actors not getting along with Bryan Singer. One of my favorites, actually, in the film, which you could probably guess from my past history on this podcast, didn't like the way her character was portrayed in the film. I thought she was the highlight of the movie, actually. And I thought Brandon Routh did a great job, but, you know, those kind of things. I'm trying to think of what to say and what not to say. So sorry.
Don't say anything that'll get you or somebody else in trouble. But like, yeah. I mean, any of the movies, or
even Mel Gibson. Think about Mel Gibson.
Oh my God! Right, but he's slowly trying to come back.
And so, you know, here's the thing: he was an alcoholic, and he said some really shitty things. I love Braveheart. Can't say I don't. I love Maverick. I think it's such a great movie that people kind of missed a little bit, some here and there, but I think it's, he did such a good job. One of Jodie Foster's best roles. She doesn't play comedy a lot. And that movie, she just nails. Her and Mel Gibson are still really good friends to this day.
But I mean, even if we look more recent than his tirade, Liam Neeson's comment, you remember that one, right? That somebody...
Yeah, it was, he said it again too. What did he say? I mean, was it?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. If you have that kind of thought, not that it's a good thought.
But what did Liam Neeson say? If you, I don't remember.
There was somebody in his family that I believe was assaulted or raped by someone of color. And he said he wanted to go out and kill or beat up somebody of color to balance it out. Not the person who did it, just anyone.
What a stupid thought. I mean,
which is a very stupid thought, because that's not going to fix anything or change what happened. And you should want justice against the person who did the crime.
Yeah.
You know, but why the hell would you say that out loud?
So dumb.
On an interview. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, look at Sean Connery. Look at the shit that he said over the years.
Right.
You know,
eating women and yeah.
I mean, like, it's really rough and you're like, oh Lord, you know.
But he's still one of my favorite Bonds. So
it's hard. And how do you separate, and can you separate one versus the other?
Right.
Right.
It's hard. I mean, it really is hard.
I think it takes a little bit of time when people say stupid things and there's a big scandal. And then it's like, okay, this just takes a minute. I can now separate the actor from the character or the actor from the film. And it does take a minute. I mean, you know, watching Bohemian Rhapsody, I was at the first public screening of that film.
And it's so good.
It's so good.
Okay.
And I remember it was, the entire cast was there, minus one of the guys who played Queen and the editor. And they were like, you know, they started the Q&A, and I remember watching it and going, oh my God, this is so good. It's on the Sony lot. No, it was Fox.
Sony. 20th Century Fox.
So it was on the Fox lot in their big theater. And I remember loving the film. I was like, holy shit, this was such a good movie.
Impressed.
And then the guy started, you know, in the Q&A, the first thing the moderator said, he's like, all right, we need to address the elephant in the room. What everyone here is thinking. I'm like, what is everyone thinking? And I didn't even know that Bryan Singer had gotten fired off the film. Yeah. I really had no idea all this stuff happened. And I'm like, am I in a rock? Like, what did I not know? And, you know, they talked about it at length, and it was great that they just really just bit the bullet and addressed it.
Well,
it was a voting crowd. So they, they really had to get in there and just say, hey, if this movie's going to win anything. And they really thought Rami Malek had a good shot of winning Best Actor. Best Picture, but
I don't dislike him in most everything he does, you know, and that role he did really well.
Yeah, he was great. So, and it was such a departure from Mr. Robot. So they really did address it, and it was interesting how they approached that subject matter, because it could have been debacle.
Yeah.
And the editor came in and took over the directing reins.
Right.
Did a great, fantastic job. No, you couldn't tell what was what, you know.
Right. You couldn't see the difference or where it switched. So, yeah. I mean, I guess on that note, the studio's getting ahead of it in the scandal rather than trying to bury it, especially now, you know, in this post Me Too world, we kind of have to take accountability for these things.
Look at Netflix and the Dave Chappelle controversy. I have not seen.
We watched about half of it.
Was it good?
No, we are not the target audience. I have a friend who absolutely thought it was hilarious. We watched it and we're just like, okay. And we were trying to get to the part where he's talking about transgender people. And we're trying to find, we just don't want to see the little snippet of information. We want to
the whole thing.
Yeah. We want to see it in context so we can make our own choice and judgment here. And we watched 40 minutes and we didn't get to it. Like, he talks about it a little at the beginning and he talks a little bit here. And I guess it was filmed here in Detroit, which.
Oh.
Okay. But we just at 40 minutes, we're like, yeah, we're done. We aren't the audience for this. Few laughs here and there, but I don't know.
And for the most part, I used to like Dave Chappelle quite a bit. I don't understand. And I don't understand why someone, even in his position, has to attack people who already are, you know, marginalized.
Right.
That's what I don't understand. I mean, look, you don't get it, you know.
But it's not yours to get.
It's not yours to get. Then all you need to do is have compassion and that's it.
Right.
All we have to do, that should be society. It's just have compassion for people. Give a shit about, you know, say, hey, look, man, I love you. You don't need to go any farther.
Right.
Even J.K. Rowling. It's like, I feel this. I think what she was trying to do, to be completely honest, not to cut you off, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I think she was trying to start a discussion and quickly realizing you cannot do that on social media. And that's what I think she was trying to do. And that blew up.
Think with her situation, what I like about what happened, she put a major tar on the franchise with what she said and being stupid. But what I like what happened is the fans basically said, screw her, we love it anyhow. Take her out of that equation. I love that the fandom for that just went, you know what, we're owning it. And I saw some tweets, and I think there was a Reddit thread basically going around saying, it's amazing that the story just came into existence and there was no author at all. They just totally cut her out of it. And, you know, I love the passion for that, that they're just like, okay, she's a moron, you know, especially the fandom for the Harry Potter franchise is a lot of queer folk, a lot of people that are in marginalized communities, and she's attacking them. And I'm just like, just 5 seconds. Think.
Well, I mean, I think in the original, I mean, I think she had mentioned her interpretation of Dumbledore that he was gay. Mm-hmm.
Which is okay.
I think it actually adds a lot to the story if you watch the movies again, because I haven't read the books, you know.
But it's kind of like the 50 Shades books. The writing's not that great. What they did with it is good.
Yeah.
So,
the books
but they're young adults, so.
Right. Yeah. It's what you get. It's you know, in some level, it's like you wonder, is like the way Draco hates Harry so much is like, was that kind of a thing that they're, I don't know. Even in the movie, you watch it a little bit and you're like, you know, love to hate, that kind of thing. I don't know. You could read between the lines. I don't think she shied away from that, because there wasn't a lot of relationships in that movie. They were very young. And you understand, but it's like I do think people try to start conversations, and I think that that's part of the problem. I don't think our society is the place to start conversations anymore. And that's
not right now.
That's not right now. And I'm like, you know, it's an issue. It shouldn't be that way. You should be able to have a conversation.
Right.
You should be able to change your opinion too and not get flamed and killed for it.
Right. Like the people going back 10, 20 years, or not 20 years, but 10, 15 years and finding a tweet for somebody that's racist. Okay. What they said at the time, totally abhorrent. No, there's no way around that. But we can hope as a human being that they have grown in 15 years, that they've changed. I mean, even in the last couple years, hopefully people have changed some.
Right. Well, look at Eddie Murphy. Like, okay, he and Raw. If you watch Eddie Murphy Raw, and he makes a lot of you're like these jokes, and he's, you know, he hasn't really come out and denounced the film, but he's like, look, I love everybody. You know, as far as I know, it's what he said something, and it's not that, you know.
But then
it's changed so much. Things have changed so much, and perceptions have changed so much.
How perceptions have changed, but also how things have been played on TV, and if you rewatch Friends.
Oh, yeah.
Look at all the bad jokes, bad gay jokes, all the way through the whole series. I love the series, but then I'm watching it. First of all, Ross is just abhorrent. He's a horrible person. But I watch it.
My dad hated Ross so much.
I'm just like, why would anybody date this dude? He's a big crying man baby. But, you know, besides that, just some of the stuff that they go through, and I'm just like, that's, you know, more unbelievable than that apartment rent controlled in New York City.
Well, look at the fat jokes that they did for Monica.
Oh my God, right?
I mean, it was honestly hilarious.
But at the time,
because Courtney Cox sold it. And she did a great job. But you watch it now and you're like, that would never fly.
Right.
They body shamed her, you know, and Courtney Cox is like, you know, honestly, I have her original costume from Scream 2 in my basement on a mannequin. I get to put my hands around it. Like, that's how thin she is.
Yeah.
And, you know, but she, you know, it was funny. I get what they were trying to do, but like, ooh, no.
Yeah, but
at the Seinfeld, you know, it's like it's all these shows.
But that stuff then could be put on TV and it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we hope, or we believe, I think, that we have a sensitivity, more sensitivity to that. Just like, and we check ourselves at times. You go, oh my God, I can't believe that person does this or blah, 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 blah. And then you're like, wait a minute. Judge the person not by their body, not by this, not by their race. If they're a piece of crap person, they're a piece of crap person.
Yep.
You know, but okay, because that person has this wrong with them. That doesn't mean they're a bad person. That's just, you know.
It's just them. I mean, and you know, and it's funny now, you like, especially the Ryan Murphy shows, they do tend to not be politically correct because they'll make these jokes that are funny, but they are very specifically written so that you know that they're in on it, and it's like, it's not
right.
So they're not being mean, they're making it so you laugh at the stereotype that you're actually mean. It's a whole different thing,
and it's attacking, and it's very a stereotype well done. Versus attacking a person, and that makes a big difference.
And Modern Family did that really well too.
They did.
If you really watch Modern Family, and people bagged on them at the whole time when everything started exploding with Me Too, they were like, "Oh, look at Modern Family," and I'm like, "Oh, no." Modern Family did it in a very specific way and a very specific thing. They're making fun of the stereotype and not the stereotype people.
Yeah,
it was a whole different thing, and they were from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum, and they did it for everybody. And it was so well done. It was so well intelligently done that I was really mad when people started trying to cancel them because they did such a great job with it.
Yeah. And there's a way that you can handle these situations, but you know, again, now it's that sensitivity and it's that writing it so it doesn't attack people. But it's taking that 5 seconds to do that.
And I think, you know, I think everything that happened, you know, it needed to happen.
Yeah. Oh gosh, it does. I mean, we have to get further from where we were.
Yeah. And I think it the pendulum swings, you know, it's like it was over here, then it swings way over the other side. And eventually you find its way back to the middle where you guys are, you know, everything is there in the middle and it kind of settles. And I think that's where we're hopefully going to get back to, because it does need to get there. You can't go too far to the other side and too far to one side. It has to be in the middle. And hopefully we will get back to the middle sooner rather than later. But it's tough, you know, and it really is interesting when you have someone in the public eye, they either get disgraced or shamed and you're like, you know, does that ruin that work? I haven't watched the Cosby Show since Bill Cosby did that. I never liked that show. I did when I was younger. My family used to watch it, but I knew he was not a nice person. I knew he was not a nice person. I knew when I got older, I mean, there was things on the Tonight Show that I knew people that worked there. And when he would guest, he was a jackass.
But you know, beside the whole, you know, raping side, there's this thing.
Besides that whole situation, that whole little thing.
That whole little thing, right? But I mean, there's other stars and there's people that we know locally that came from here, like Tim Allen. He's known for being a total ass.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if we even take this to current, like a current scandal issue that's happening, what about Ellen?
Yeah. Oh, dude.
See,
I can tell you a story about Ellen. She is one of the darkest people.
Really? And she turns on the
oh, it's all, that's all an act. Like everything that people have said, it's all true. I used to be on her lot all the time.
Okay.
And I knew several, I mean, like, I was kind of a little whore. I would be on that lot. I had friends at Tonight Show and we would go meet people all the time. And the Tonight Show and Ellen were in the same studio in Burbank off Alameda. And so Ellen would have a studio on the left, and then you go around the corner in the Midway, and that's where the Tonight Show was.
Okay.
And then when Jay Leno took over the 10 p.m. spot, Ellen left and they went to Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories were just,
and that was before her show, well before her show.
Oh yeah, the stories. The Ellen DeGeneres show was taping.
Oh, okay.
The people that I knew, that because there was people that worked on, you know, runners that would go between both, and oh my gosh, everybody hated it over there. It was miserable, and she made it miserable. Like, she would do things to torment people on purpose and be mean to people on purpose, which was the opposite of Jay Leno, which really upset me when he got all that flack for Conan, because that man is a teddy bear. He didn't know me from Adam, but he would recognize me because I would be there a lot
all the time
around. And he'd be like, "Hey man, how you doing?" He would grab me and I'm like, "You don't know me, dude." But I mean,
but
he wanted to make sure that I was, he thought I could have been a staff. I could have been this. He recognized my face. Just the most kindest man.
When it comes to Ellen, her roles, I mean, I don't know too many of them, but
she isn't really been acting, but besides Dory and Mr. Wrong. I mean, that's funny actually, when you think about that movie.
But I still like Dory, but that was basically just her.
That was just her voice. I mean, she did in the 90s called Open House.
Okay.
That was a spinoff, as on Fox. It was a spinoff of Duet, and it lasted one season. This is the crap that's in my brain. And then she went after her own show, Ellen, or it was called Friends Like These, and it turned to Ellen.
Okay.
And that lasted four seasons, and that was her coming out. And then she did her talk show.
Yeah. But there was a big gap between her coming out and the talk show because of the whole scandal, but that's because they announced it to prepare everyone. And now you have things in like Loki where he confirms that he's bisexual or pansexual or whatever it was. And everybody's just like, yeah, okay, cool.
Makes sense, whatever, who cares? I mean, no one cares. It's like, great. No,
well, super conservatives care, but they're not listening to us anyhow. So,
well, I mean, at that point, you know, it's like, look, you had True Blood. You know, that show broke a lot of boundaries in terms of, you know, thanks to Alan Ball. 6 Feet Under, even another Alan Ball show, did that. There's a lot of shows and things that just didn't care, you know. And nowadays, it's like stories I heard from high school. I was like, wow, I wish I was in high school now. I could be.
Well, and that's people. The thing. It's a different world from where even when I was in high school, when you were in high school, and I know you said you weren't a fan of the movie, but one of the things that I loved about Booksmart was, roll your eyes at me, thank you, but was that it's so, there was no body shaming. There was no shaming for sexuality. It was just, they're kids, that's it. That they accepted everybody. Yeah, you might be a dork. All right, they'll make fun of you for that, you know, or sleeping around too much or whatever. So that stuff was still there, but oh, she's gay, no big deal. He's gay, no big deal.
Right.
So I liked that. So even if you don't like the movie, you know, you got to give it props for that.
I didn't hate the movie. I just thought it could have been, better written. And I thought they're trying to push it out too hard. I thought they tried to force it really hard because it was a female writer and female director, and that was her movie. And they're like, oh, this needs to be out there because this, and it was, I felt like the hype was being pushed rather than the actual product being good enough. And the movie itself was okay. It was fine. I enjoyed it. But, and I love those kind of films. I've watched it once, never needed to see it again. Whereas I can watch a teen comedy no matter what, 100 times. I love
that. What is funny to me is the guys that I know who have seen that movie say that same thing. They don't need to see it again. Every girl I know that's seen Booksmart, they're like, absolutely love it. I'll watch it again. So maybe there's something more relatable.
It could be. And it really could be. It just, I thought there were, I'm trying to remember going back in time. It just felt, I didn't like a couple of the other, the characters in the party.
Like the Gigi girl?
Yeah, there was just some things that I was like, whatever.
I mean, it's a teen movie, but.
No, but I mean, think about, you know, Can't Hardly Wait. And you think about Empire Records and you think about, you know, Clueless and you think about Mean Girls and you think about 16 Candles. I mean, those are all staples.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Legally Blonde wasn't really a teen comedy. It was more college, but, you know, all of it. I love it. I mean, a teen comedy, sign me up. I mean, I even watched She's All That again because I was like, oh, I wonder if it's a terrible as I remember. Yes, it is.
But it has that trope in it that I talked about earlier. She, you know, she's an artsy dork.
She's really hot.
She's ugly because she's wearing glasses and wearing overalls covered in paint. And us art students go, meh, because.
Right.
Like, I'm going to wear my nice clothes to paint? Screw you. So, you know, but take her glasses off and she's gorgeous. So she's.
Right. It's like, oh, look, she has like, oh, she's a size 2. We didn't know that, really.
Yeah. She wore baggy clothes like every other girl did in the 90s.
Yeah. It was. Right. And I know I'm not a big fan of the Freddie Prinze oeuvre, but I just think his teen comedies weren't that great.
Yeah. He wasn't my guy crush.
Yeah, he just kind of felt like...
He was there.
Yeah, he felt like looking at Paste. Like, it's there. I guess it serves a purpose. Yeah. But why?
Right.
Like, it just... Even in I Know What You Did Last Summer, I thought he was just there. I thought Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillippe, and Jennifer Love Hewitt...
I like him.
Did a great job.
Right.
And then Freddie was just like, oh, I'm a fisherman. I mean, it was just like, you're there. Ryan Phillippe is doing such a good job. And you're like,
he did so good in most of his roles. So you expected him to do good. So
I love Ryan Phillippe. I think he's an underrated actor.
But he took,
really underrated actor.
He took a break for a while.
Any? Yeah, he did. If you watch, I don't know if you saw Shooter on USA.
No.
For totally diverging topics. I just would like to point out that I'm aware.
I don't know what Shooter, you're talking about.
He did the adaptation of Shooter on USA. I think it was USA or TNT, one of those two.
The 2018.
It was 3 years, I think it was. It was really, he was so good.
And he's been on Big Sky since 2020. I've never seen that.
I have not seen that either. I love Katherine Winnick. She was a girl crush for a little while there from Vikings. And if you haven't seen Vikings, definitely see Vikings.
Okay.
The first four seasons.
Of course, from the man who wants to be burnt on a funeral pyre, go see Vikings.
with all of my stuff, just light us all on fire and let us go.
Because I'm going to say, like, the last real movie that, I mean, we'd seen Crash. I want to say the last one we have on our system of him would be Antitrust.
Oh, God. Don't see that. It's terrible.
Not my choice. But, you know, he has a decent list.
Yeah, if you check out Shooter, he did a really good job portraying that. He was the Marky Mark character from the movie. And he did a really good job. And it was a really well done series, I thought. And they had a lot of problems too, because they were right in the middle of the writer's strike and they had to cut one season short and go back. And it was a little tough. You know, I remember watching it, but he did a great job. And he held that show together, I thought, really well. And he owned it. Like, he did really well. It's a tough role, actually.
Well,
being
that makes
macho
sense.
And knowing the military stuff, but yet he was also had a little bit of a sensitivity to him. It was kind of nice.
That's good. I'll add it to our list. I think we're just gonna finally start Ted Lasso, because
I haven't seen Ted Lasso yet.
One of my friends loves it, and I want to say 2 months ago, Loot Crate had a free. They just sent out an email for a free Loot Crate, and it was a Ted Lasso one. Yeah,
I want a Loot Crate.
Like, and it was in my email, and they had a limited number, so I was like, "All right, I don't watch it, but Drew does," so I got it, and that's his Christmas present, shipping it off to him. But now we're gonna start it, and I bet somebody else is gonna like the show. So,
I'm sure. Anyway, so that was a really fun discussion, I have to say. I was thinking for next week,
our
films to watch, I was thinking we could pick movies that are against our type.
Okay.
That something that someone would not think that we would actually like.
Okay.
Like a film that, you know, like,
it's a film that's in our collection that people
wouldn't think that you liked.
Oh, shit.
Like, it's not a Becky movie. Like, it's like, but you love it and you don't know why.
Okay.
Like, if it would be me, like,
what is your choice?
Any foppy English costume drama or something like that. Like, that would be, like, if that would be a mic choice. I don't like those kind of movies. I don't like talkies, you know, necessarily. And so I'm going to pick, for my choice, I'm going to pick a film called The Last Days of Disco. And it was a Whit Stillman film from the 90s. And Whit Stillman does a movie every like 8 years or something. It's ridiculous. And it was one of Kate Beckinsale's first movies. And it starred Kate Beckinsale, Chloe Sevigny, Mackenzie Astin was in it.
I think I've heard of it.
And it was a weird talkie. It was just about like the end of the disco era. And Studio 54, and it came out just around the same time as 54 came out, with Ryan Phillippe, ironically, which is why I thought of it just now. But I was obsessed with this movie, and it's not a Mike movie. It's a very much a character study, very like nothing actually happens really. It's just kind of this slice of life film that Whit Stillman's kind of known for, and. I fell in love with it. I loved Kate Beckinsale in it. I thought she was really great. And it was kind of when I first noticed her. And so that's my choice. It's not a Mike movie at all. Like, you know, even the choices I've picked from our Dazed and Confused, Event Horizon, Batman Returns, down the line.
It might have all been fluff so far. Pretty much, right?
And so this one's going to be a little bit different in that respect of one I love.
So far.
Ironically, when I got in the theater, I had a poster of this on my bedroom wall through college. That's how much I liked it.
Okay. So, and I'm thinking something that is going against everything else that I've chosen so far, because
just against your type. Like, it's, you know, if someone would see that movie, they wouldn't be like, oh, Becky would love that. Totally different.
Okay. So, ironically, as much as I started this out saying I don't like horror movies, I'm going to throw it way back. We're going to watch Carrie.
Oh, one of my favorite movies.
I love it. And I think I watched it for the first time with my mom, and I watched it. I was 14, and that was like my introduction to horror. But I mean, I loved reading Stephen King novels and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in general, I'm not a huge horror person. So do I understand this assignment properly, sir?
I think so, because honestly, in reality, these two choices would be flipped. I would be Carrie and you would be Last Season Disco. So I think this is perfect. But Carrie is one of my favorites. Okay. I think that movie, you know, you watch it now,
it's cheesy.
I mean, I'm not going that far. I think it's not a horror movie.
Well, no, it's more psychological.
Yeah.
And I mean, and this is going to sound really bad and it might show my age, but I really enjoyed Carrie 2 as well. Cause I was at that right.
The Rage.
That poster. I worked at the movie theater when that came out. So I had the big ass poster. I may still have some of those in the basement.
That was with, she was on Desperate Housewives, Carrie. The new Carrie. I can see your face. And it brought back Steven Spielberg's ex-wife for that film, was the only original character that came back, Amy Irving.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
funny. I own it, I think, on DVD somewhere.
Dude, I don't own either of these movies. But
it was such a bad, fun movie.
Right.
Because Jason London was the guy.
Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because he's one of those, like, he was in Dazed and Confused and some other ones that we watched, but he was one of those guys that I always saw in those movies. And I was like, oh, he's so cute. No idea who he was. Right. So it was one of those.
His twin brother, Jeremy London, who was in Mallrats.
Oh, well, that
I believe they're twins. I believe they're twins. They could be just brothers, but I don't remember.
I do not know.
But he doesn't. He had a hard time with drugs and stuff. And after Mallrats, I don't think he really did too much. But Jeremy London, he was a really good actor for a while. For those utilitarian kind of like teen sensitive boys, you know, he did a good job. I mean, look, Dazed and Confused. He did Rage Carry 2.
Jason?
There wasn't. What?
You said Jeremy. Jason.
Jason. See, they're switchachrone.
See, there you go.
But he was really good for those.
It's one of those things that I was like, oh, he's so cute. And I have no idea. He was one of those guys, you know, he wasn't like Jonathan Taylor Thomas that we all knew his name because I was that age group. So, you know, he wasn't one of my major heartthrobs. I know. It. You're rolling
your eyes. I do enjoy. No, I mean, I'm not a Jonathan Taylor Thomas kind of guy, but, you know.
Yeah, but
thank God.
Yeah, but I think he's about my age. So he was, you know, had the hair and everything, the 90s, all that. So
he did have hair in the 90s.
He still has hair. He's one of the few that do. So.
I think that's going to be fun. Actually watching Carrie again. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it in years.
I went to a reunion screening 4 years ago and half the cast was there. PJ Souls was there, Nancy Allen. I'm trying to think. Who's the guy? Well, William Catt. William Catt was there. The mom, Piper Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really fun screening. Actually didn't go into the movie because the cast was coming in. So we were waiting outside, had them sign all our stuff. And we got to hang out literally with PJ Souls, William Catt, and Nancy Allen for like 25 minutes just shooting the shit. It was so fun.
See, and I just thought of another one that's probably, well, I don't know if that one's really against my type. I mean, it's against what we've watched so far.
But it's against your type. Like it wouldn't be something that.
I'm the only one in the house that will watch this movie. The other choice.
What is it? What is
Rocky Horror Picture Show. I love it.
Dude, it's great. My friend Lisa is like the, and we can bring her on to have a special Rocky Horror talk because she wrote the book on Rocky Horror, I believe.
See if she'll do that and we can set that up. Well, I don't know, by Halloween, because that's coming fast, but
we can set it up. She's great. Well, she's one of my best friends. I love Lisa. She's great. She's she wrote a Brady Bunch book too on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. Yeah. And she worked with Richard O'Brien on one of his records. So we can definitely do that one day. And my friend Terry actually was in Carrie.
Really?
If she was in the plug it up scene.
Oh God, I hate that scene.
with Edie McClurg, but yeah. She, if you watch her, she's in the back. She's very noticeable. I can invite her to be on our podcast of, you know, so my mom can watch it. At some point too, we can talk about it because she's hilarious.
Okay.
And my friend Terry was also in, I wanted a little quick plug for her movie, a documentary called Strictly Background.
Okay.
And it was about background actors who, you know, and they followed them kind of like through her thing. And she was Roseanne, standing on Roseanne. She was on Newhart.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. She
was one of the motorcycle mamas in Pee-wee's Big Adventure with Cassandra Peterson. And she's also a founding member of the Groundlings.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And nice. She's a character. We became good friends. I adore her. She's a character, man.
We're going to start tapping into that and bringing some of your friends on. Most of my friends, they're not, I mean, if they're in LA, you know them anyhow. So
yeah, let's save Rocky because we can do a musical kind of thing.
Do we want to do three movies next week?
No. Let's do Carrie. Let's do our two. And then we'll save Rocky. I think Rocky's kind of a perfect one for the following week.
Okay.
And we'll see, you know.
See if you can join us.
Yeah, we'll see if Lisa can join us for at least half the discussion.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That'd be fun.
All right. So
sounds good. Well, let's wrap this up because we're babbling now about next week so my mom can watch. And the four of you that are tuning in,
we do
appreciate the patronage. This week's episode is brought to you by 7-Eleven. If you're in the mood for a frosty beverage that you can spike with any amount of alcohol you want.
Oh, that's what's happening. Okay.
Get the super big gulp from 7-Eleven. If you get the extra large size, you will definitely get a little bit of a caffeine rush.
What kind of alcohol did you put in there?
None, shockingly. But you can. If you're in the mood for a frosty beverage, you can just put in the fridge and freeze. It's amazing. Totally do it. I highly suggest it. Personally, when I'm going to the super big gulp section or the it's not super big gulp, I guess it's super frosty, slurpy, big gulp.
Slurpy.
When I want to fill up, I get Coke, then I do a splash of cherry, then I do more Coke, then I do a splash of cherry, then I do more Coke on top. And this way you get the full melting mix as you're going down. So I highly suggest that.
We're talking about diverging concepts here.
I highly suggest that. So thank you to 7-Eleven for sponsoring us this week.
Now, 7-Eleven, if you hear this ever and you want to sponsor, we will do a real spot without the alcohol included. So.
I didn't put it in. I just said you could.
Well, okay.
It's definitely that thing.
But anyway.
But so thank you for 7-Eleven for sponsoring us this week.
So that is it for today. Check out our website, unpaidmoviecritics.com, and we will be back next week with another episode. Bye.
Sponsored in part by Walmart.
Oh, God, no. Like, what are you doing? I am stopping this recording right now.